Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher, 8:06 on this Tuesday. It's July 1st. Currently, we've got 68 degrees here in Old Town Park City, 67 degrees in the Heber Valley. And on the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Cedric Haynes. Good morning.
I'm ABC 4 meteorologist Cedric Haynes. It's time for a look at your Tuesday forecast here across the Wasatch Back. Get ready for the heat. That's right. We're looking at a mixture of clouds and sunshine, so we'll call it partly cloudy skies. High temperatures in Park City will climb into the upper 80s to near 90 degrees this afternoon. So, yes, it's going to be a scorcher out there across the area. As you're going to be in the Heber Valley, look for partly cloudy skies. Those temperatures are going to be heating up as well. We're looking at highs climbing into the mid-90s across the Heber Valley. So, definitely, the heat is on. Along with the heat, we're going to be tracking the potential of a few isolated pop-up showers and storms developing with the daytime heating and a little monsoon moisture trying to move into the area. This will not be widespread, but there will be a few scattered showers and storms that will develop. Some of these showers and storms could produce some heavy downpours, but they could also produce some dry lightning, which could help to spark any wildfires out there. So we've got to be careful and watching out for that with the dry vegetation that we have in place across the region. As we go into your Wednesday, look for more heat and more chances of isolated to scattered showers and storms popping up. High temperatures in Park City will be slightly cooler with the extra cloud cover and a few isolated storms. Highs will only be in the mid-80s for your Wednesday for Park City. High temperatures will be climbing only to around 90 to 91 in the Heber Valley. As we go into your Thursday, we'll continue with that chance of partly cloudy skies and a few isolated to afternoon showers and storms popping up. High temperatures in Park City will be around 80 degrees for your Thursday afternoon, with highs only in the mid-80s for the Heber Valley as we go into your Thursday afternoon with that chance of a few pop-up showers and storms. Now, after we get towards your Thursday, going into your Friday, the 4th of July, is looking drier and hotter. We're looking at lots of sunshine in Park City. High temperatures will be in the low 80s for your 4th of July. We're looking at high temperatures climbing into the mid to upper 80s in the Heber Valley. Now, for your 4th of July weekend, Saturday and Sunday, look for lots of sunshine and temperatures back up near 90 for the Heber Valley, and with high temperatures in the mid 80s for Park City. That's a look at your latest forecast from the ABC Forecast Center. I'm meteorologist Cedric Haynes.
Stay tuned. In just a few minutes, we'll be checking in with Wasatch County Manager Dustin Graybell. He'll have a preview of this week's county council meeting, as well as an update on several issues. From the Canyons Village Management Association, I'll have the Director of Marketing, Debbie LaBille, along with the Director of Parking and Operations, John Simmons, details about this week's three-day Forum Fest, as well as construction of the parking garage. And finally, from the Summit Land Conservancy, CEO Cheryl Fox. Taking a look at some local news now. In the wake of a deadly crash on US 40 just north of Heber City, leaders and locals alike say it's time to reconsider the area's speed limits. KPCW's Grace Dorfler reports.
The Utah Department of Transportation shared an update on the bypass route at the Heber City Council meeting June 17th. The discussion quickly evolved to include safety concerns about North US 40 as well. With a fatal crash May 27th still front of mind for many, Heber residents took advantage of UDOT's presence at the meeting to plead for new safety measures on the highway. Currently, the speed limit is 55 miles per hour from River Road to just north of downtown. Around Smith's Marketplace, the limit drops to 45 miles per hour, and in downtown proper, it's 35. As rapid residential development reshapes North 40, some locals say the speed limits are due for an adjustment. Wade Hansen owns a farm on North 40. He said he has a bird's eye view of the traffic situation, and he doesn't think the speed limit drops soon enough.
You got 55, everybody's going 65. Finally, they put a 45 decreased speed limit sign, 100 yards from the 35, which is at the light practically? It's dangerous.
He said it's terrifying to get into and out of his driveway.
I don't understand, from a safety standpoint, why they can't simply lower the speed limit to even at 45 before, say, Coyote Lane. Bring it down. There's a lot of businesses. It's dangerous, real dangerous, to get in and out.
Resident Alicia Richardson agreed. She lives just west of that stretch of 40 and said she worries whenever she invites guests over.
Every time we have people up at our ranch, I always say to them, be very careful. The traffic is so fast. In a few years, we're going to have some grandchildren with driver's licenses. And I am petrified for them to come up to our ranch and to leave and to go home to Salt Lake. That left-hand turn there is so dangerous.
The driver killed a month ago, 34-year-old Eliezer Ramirez Morelos, was struck by a semi-truck while attempting to turn left from a driveway near Coyote Ridge. In 2023 and 2024, the Utah Department of Transportation says there were nearly 100 crashes on the five-mile stretch of US 40 between River Road and 1200 South, with three fatalities. The deadly crash in May marked the fourth person killed there over the last few years. Heber City Mayor Heidi Franco said although she realizes drivers want to get to their destinations quickly, convenience cannot come at such a high cost.
How many deaths does it take, you know, before we finally put our foot down and say safety is more important?
She said the speed limit on North 40 ought to be 35 miles per hour from downtown until Coyote Canyon Parkway. Franco said many Wasatch County drivers see the speed limits as suggestions rather than laws.
People see 45 and say, I'm going to go 55. Mm-hmm. Oh, now I'm going 60. And that's why I'm saying we really need to think about 35, because anything above that, I think people are going to just treat it the same.
She said additional speed enforcement on the highway could help too. Any changes to the speed limit on 40 must be decided by UDOT, since it's a state highway, not a city road. City engineer Russ Funk said Heber officials requested a speed study a couple years ago, and UDOT didn't recommend changes at the time. He said as UDOT designs barriers for North 40, locals and elected leaders should share their thoughts.
And I would encourage the council or anybody else who's concerned about safety and access on the Highway 40 to give their input on that. I know the city council is supportive, but there were others in the county who maybe weren't as convinced.
The barriers are intended to make left turns safer. In December 2024, the Wasatch County Council voted 4-3 to support the project, with some council members saying they were worried about access to Potter's Lane. The Heber City Council voted unanimously in favor of the plans in November. UDOT said at the meeting June 17th, a traffic light will be installed at the intersection of 40 and Coyote Canyon Parkway by the end of the year. Heber City is a financial supporter of KPCW. Grace Dorfler, KPCW News.
The Wasatch County Council meets Wednesday at 4 o'clock. On the phone with a preview of the meeting is Wasatch County Manager Dustin Graybaugh. Good morning.
Good morning.
Let's start where we left off with that last news story. Heber City leaders and residents pushing for slower speed limits on North US 40. What's the county's take on that? Should the speed be lower?
I think there's a lot of interest in ensuring any improvements on North Highway 40 that make it safer. We've had council members express concern with the speed and if the speed change might affect the need for some of those other barrier projects, which was some of the concerns they raised in the past. So I think overall it's a complicated question. UDOT has standards that they have to abide by and process they have to follow. But we definitely encourage any kinds of safety improvements in that area.
Yeah, so support for those barriers has grown among council members since that recent fatal crash?
I believe so, yes.
Okay, hot and dry conditions. We've got statewide fire restrictions in place. So are county residents allowed to use fireworks for 3 days this week?
I think we'd like to encourage people just to be as safe as possible, certainly in any areas that are in the wildland-urban interface. So if you live on the hillsides, those are areas that we definitely want to make sure that we're avoiding. Those restrictions don't extend, though, to inside the municipalities. So I think that you can, in the valley floor, in an improved fire pit, still have fires, but I'm not certain on the other details around the fire restrictions or what the municipalities are doing within their boundaries.
Okay. Let's see. Where are we with the e-bike ordinance? I know that was discussed at a recent meeting.
Yeah, so we typically do two readings anytime we make changes to our code, and so we'll be doing the second reading of that ordinance tomorrow, and we expect the council will adopt it kind of as proposed.
Okay, and can you kind of give us the bullet points of what that ordinance will look like?
Yeah, really what it does is we feel like it fills in the gaps in the state code language, which allows us to be able to post speed limit signs in areas where it makes sense, to be able to make it clear that we're only allowing class one bikes on backcountry roads, and that e-bikes are the only kind of, if you will, motorized vehicle allowed on county trails. We want to keep also e-bikes and other motorized vehicles off of parks, so you can still ride them on paved areas and parks, but not through the grassy areas. We want to avoid any kind of pedestrian bike incidents.
All right. And also on the agenda, looks like a lot of proposed changes to the guidelines and scoring criteria for the Wasatch Trails Arts and Parks grant application.
Yeah, we. I think it's going to be a continually iterative process as we kind of dial in what are the priorities for the use of this funding. What this reflects is just a further refinement of what we've already done and kind of clarifying. We're bringing down the limits, not the limits, the dollar amount of the large grants and increasing the criteria there that includes including the council and part of the evaluation of those larger grants. The council hasn't expressed an interest with the Red, White, and Blue Festival and other projects going forward that if they're of a sufficient size, they want some extra scrutiny on those projects.
Okay, let's see, just lots of other stuff kind of in the background here. I mean, what's the latest with the Heber Valley bypass project?
You know, UDOT came to present a little while ago, and I think we expect them to produce a draft EIS within the coming months. What that will be is they will identify which of the two alternatives or no build option is recommended by that environmental impact statement. And so we're kind of getting regular updates from UDOT, and I think the communication has been really good in recent months, and right now they're just kind of in the thick of it.
Yeah. I mean, you say a no-build option. Is that really an option?
Yeah, I think that's always an option until they do the record of decision, which is the final EIS that will be done in the first part of next year.
Okay. I mean, just that's what UDOT does is build stuff, yeah?
Correct. But there have been times where a no-build option is the recommended route that you know, it is preferred given all of the competing interests. I'm not certain that will be the case here, but ultimately that's part of the task that UDOT has to fulfill to evaluate that there is actually a need sufficient to warrant spending the money, having the impacts that they do in order to meet that purpose and need.
Yeah, and do you expect the council to kind of take a position on one of those options?
In the past, the council has been very consistent in opposing options that extend through the north fields. I wouldn't be surprised if the council took the same approach now, but overall, I think the council has coalesced around we need something more than nothing, and to the extent that we can encourage it to be in the way that we think is best, we will advocate for that perspective.
Okay, where do things stand with the redo of the Wasatch County General Plan?
We have started to convene the focus groups that are providing feedback on some of the statements that we are working on. So we have basically four areas of our general plan. We have done some community-wide feedbacks. We concluded the survey, received several hundred, people who filled out that feedback. And then we are kind of now digging into some of the details. So this will be another, you know, 6-month process or so. Maybe not quite that long, but what we're hoping to do is be able to develop some specific action steps that we can take to the Planning Commission and County Council for adoption in the revised general plan.
All right, and certainly you expect to have it done by end of year then?
I think we actually expect it to extend into next year, partway through next year.
Okay, and in terms of funding, I mean, you got some money behind it to do the work that is needed?
I believe we did get some minor grants, but most of this we're doing in-house. So we have some excellent staff who have great qualifications who are kind of guiding this process. And so I think we feel like we are on a good track and haven't needed to spend a whole lot of money. So we're going to continue down that route for now.
Okay. High Valley Transit, still running this summer. Is that still the same service that was offered during the winter months?
High Valley Transit adjusts based on their projected demands. So in the summer months, we tend to have less frequent connections between Heber City and Park City. And so they will adjust the size of the vehicle based on that demand. I haven't heard recently any major changes to that, but we still offer the microtransit service and there is still the regular connection between Heber and Park City.
Great. All right. And then any plans for expansion this winter?
That's still an ongoing discussion of, I think the anticipation is yes, but in what way we haven't nailed down yet.
Okay. Let's see. What about the request from Heber City for Wasatch County to reconsider joining their CRA, the Community Reinvestment Act?
Yeah, this is something that kind of has recently bubbled up that I know Heber City kind of went back to the drawing board and has raised some new ideas. And I think We haven't really discussed it in detail. We plan to convene. We have a standing subcommittee of three council members that are our CRA subcommittee, and we haven't met yet with them. What we're hoping to get from Heber City is a little bit more detail of what exactly the proposal is. And so I would say it's still in the very early stages of discussion. But overall, I think it does some to address the concerns the council had with the last go around.
All right. And any updates with regard to Olympic planning?
Yeah, the Utah Olympic Committee has begun to coordinate meetings with local stakeholder groups. Wasatch County does have representation in there through some of our elected officials in the municipalities. And really, it's a whole lot to do. And we have started the process of really just getting our arms around the planning effort and identifying specific projects. I think we've coalesced around really narrowing the scope down to identifying transportation projects that are of a high priority, housing projects that are a high priority. And those transportation might include things like transit or parking or other things like that.
Okay, so you do hold kind of planning meetings on a regular basis at this point, or not really?
Not yet, no. We're largely waiting for, we have this larger stakeholder meeting with a Wasatch Beck subgroup that we are working on. And so no, we haven't begun regular meetings with just Wasatch County officials.
All right, and finally wanted to ask you about the, what's the latest with the Sheriff's Office investigation into those allegations of retaliation and misconduct?
The only extent that I'm aware of is that I think Judge McKelvey has begun to compose his report. We're hoping that in the next few weeks to have more concrete information based on whatever he produces for us.
Okay, that's what I think I heard from you a couple weeks ago, so we're still weeks away.
Yeah, I think there was one interview that was outstanding that was scheduled, I believe, for this week. And so once that interview is complete, then that means that it's really just the written report that needs to be completed.
Got it. Okay, anything else you wanted to mention, Dustin?
No, not today.
All right, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
That's Wasatch County Manager Dustin Graybaugh. Well, Habitat for Humanity Restore employees found something they don't usually collect in the pile of donations last week, firearms. KPCW's Connor Thomas explains they were reported lost or stolen.
The Summit County Sheriff's Office has seized four rifles that turned up and a large shipment of donated items at the Habitat for Humanity's Park City Restore. The Restore's website says it does not accept firearms, and employees asked the Sheriff's Office to check the serial numbers on the rifles, which were in their original packaging, says Sheriff's Office spokesperson Skylar Talbot.
All of the firearms that they were having us check did have records on NCIC as being lost or stolen.
That's the National Crime and Information Center, a federal database allowing agencies across the country to exchange information. The Sheriff's Office has contacted the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives, the agency through which the guns were reported lost or stolen.
And then again, we don't know for sure, but likely, and what we believe happened is this was just a shipping error. Whatever organization was donating these items to the business, somehow these firearms were either mislabeled or somehow ended up in a shipment that was going to be donated but shouldn't have.
Deputies then think whichever business meant to ship or receive the firearms contacted the ATF when they got lost in transit. No suspects are wanted because deputies do not believe the guns were used in a crime or turned up at the Restore because of anything nefarious. Habitat for Humanity of Summit and Wasatch Counties is a financial supporter of KPCW. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
Homeowners in Park City Heights are sharing concerns about a proposed affordable housing development in nearby Clark Ranch. KPCW's Parkamala Testa has more on that.
Park City purchased over 300 acres known as Clark Ranch in 2014. The land straddles U.S. Highway 40 in the Quinns Junction area. The city previously identified a 12-acre parcel in Clark Ranch, just south of Park City Heights, west of the highway, as a suitable location for future affordable housing. The city entered into a 12-month exclusive negotiating agreement with developer Alexander Company in November 2024 as part of a public-private partnership to build housing on the site. The plan involves up to 210 units of housing, according to a fact sheet from the city. Park City Heights resident Danielle Meister told the council Thursday they should consider building the project east of US 40 near Richardson Flat to ease traffic in the area.
So this is not NIMBYism. We are not opposing development. We just want it in our front yard instead of our backyard.
Along with criticizing the project's proposed density, neighbors such as Jennifer Sutton cited concerns about the new neighborhood connecting to Park City Heights streets.
And I think town needs more affordable housing for a large number of reasons. Our largest concern, or my largest concern with the project, is really around the traffic increase in Park City Heights and Richardson Flats if Park City Heights does become that access point into Clark Ranch.
The International Fire Code requires development with more than 30 units to have 2 points of access for emergency services. Park City intends to build a new frontage road that would serve as the primary means of accessing the Clark Ranch housing project. A secondary emergency access road from Park City Heights will be constructed to ensure there is access if the frontage road becomes inaccessible, according to a city spokesperson. A gate separating the two neighborhoods has been proposed to ensure it does not function as a thoroughfare. The city council previously requested high-level cost estimates for a tunnel or bridge to connect Clark Ranch to the east side of US 40. The project website says the city intends to complete a new traffic study for the proposed development. More details and answers to frequently asked questions about the Clark Ranch project can be found online at kpcw.org. Park City is aiming to begin constructing the project next year. Park City Municipal is a financial supporter of KPCW. Parker Malatesta, KPCW News.
U.S. Senator Mike Lee says he has pulled his controversial proposal to sell federal public lands from the Big Beautiful Bill. The Salt Lake Tribune reporting a 940-page Senate version of President Donald Trump's signature domestic policy was released June 28th. The bill at that time would have required the Department of the Interior to sell up to 0.5% of all Bureau of Land Management land across 11 western states, including Utah, to make room for housing development. But GOP senators have struggled to find agreement on the overall bill. Some House Republicans expressed their disapproval of selling federal land, and the Senate rules enforcer dealt Lee a setback when they said his effort did not abide by requirements for budget bills. Utah senior U.S. senator announced his public lands proposal had met its end Saturday evening. Speaking on X, Lee said he rescinded the proposal due to the strait constraints of the budget reconciliation process that would not allow him to secure clear, enforceable safeguards to guarantee that these lands would be sold only to American families. Because Republicans in Congress are trying to pass the Big Beautiful Bill Act through the budget reconciliation process, only a simple majority is required in the Senate, as opposed to a filibuster proof majority of 60 votes. The publication Politico reported Saturday night that Senate Republicans did not have the votes yet to pass Trump's bill, and that Lee was potentially in a group of holdouts concerned about the massive spending in the bill. This weekend, CVMA, the Canyons Village Management Association, presents the three-day Forum Fest. In the studio with details, I have Marketing Director Debbie LaBelle, as well as with an update on the parking situation, the Director of Parking and Operations, John Simmons. Good morning to both of you. Thanks for being here.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, real close to that mic there, Debbie. Thank you. So start by giving us just an overview of this week's Forum Fest. I mean, what should people expect?
Sure. So it's an amazingly fun three-day, family-friendly, free festival. It happens July 3rd through the 5th in Canyons Village at Park City Mountain. The three things it features is really live music, family-friendly activities, and of course, fireworks and a drone show.
Okay, so that's happening all 3 days, all three?
All 3 days, yeah. And really it's a similar schedule, but different things each night. So you can go each night and experience kind of different things, different bands, different drone show. It's all a little bit different each night.
Yeah, so do you have the names? I mean, do you have the headliners that you've got?
Yeah.
Tell us about who's playing when.
Sure, so on July 3rd, we have Nick Parr and the Selfless Lovers, and they're an amazing band. All of the bands at Forum Fest this year are from out of town. So nothing local, it's all kind of regional and national. Some of them do world tours. So anyway, so we have Nick Parr and the Selfless Lovers, and then later that night, we have March 4th Marching Band, totally entertaining band. July 4th, we have Hogslop String Band, and then we have Lane Hardy, who was on American Idol a few years ago. He's amazing. And then July 5th, we have Neon Velvet. They're an amazing 80s band. And then we close out with Super Diamond.
Okay. And so when do things start heating up?
Sure. So it starts at 4 o'clock. Doors open really at 3 o'clock. Cabaret runs at 3. We start at 4. And we have DJ Nate Wyatt out of L.A. He starts on the Forum stage. And then we have activities that run all night until the fireworks, and they start at 10:15. So we have things going on all night between 4 o'clock and 10:15.
Okay. So tell us about, you know, the artist or the face painting or what else is going on.
Okay. So this year we have a dedicated kids area, which is going to be so much fun. We have cornhole, we have mini golf, we have a puppy pit with Nuzzles and Company, we have an owl show, we have face painting, henna, and then for the adults, we have things like axe throwing. We actually have a mechanical bull this year, and then a multi-day cornhole tournament for adults.
Okay. So what do people need to bring?
So really just bring themselves. We have food trucks, so there's plenty of food. I would say sunscreen for sure. We will have water on site. There will be food, drinks, food trucks. So really bring themselves and bring the fun.
Okay. Bring a water bottle. Do they need to bring chairs, blankets?
They can bring, for the concerts, they can bring the short chairs, just not tall chairs. But there's a big lawn area. So the mountain stage is a huge area with a huge lawn. So yes, they can bring blankets.
Okay, so you're going to kind of start with the warm-up in the Forum and then move to the big hillside.
So DJ Nate Wyatt is in the Forum starting at 4 o'clock, and then we have bands coming after that. And then we have DJ Nate Wyatt kind of in the middle. So you have DJ Nate Wyatt on the Forum stage from 4 to 6, and then we have a live concert from 6 to 8, and then DJ Nate Wyatt again from 8 to 8:45 on the Forum stage, and then we have another live concert from 8:45 to 10:15, and then we roll right into the fireworks.
Okay, so you mentioned drone show. Is that happening all three nights as well?
Yes.
Drone and fireworks?
Drone and fireworks. So we start with a drone show, and this year we actually have 500 drones. Last year we had 300. So it's going to be even more spectacular, and there's kind of a theme each night. So the first night is more spring and summer sports related. So hiking, biking, fishing, things like that are going to appear in the sky. And then, of course, 4th of July, it'll be a little bit more 4th of July related. And then on the 5th, we have more winter sports, so skiing, snowboarding, things like that.
Okay. So, John, what should visitors know in terms of attending with all of the ongoing construction there at the base
of
Cabaret?
Yeah, so obviously, if you've been driving by 224 and looking at Canaan's Village, you've noticed a big crane in the sky. So our new parking garage is well underway, which is very exciting for us, but also, you know, creates some challenges as we have this big event coming up this week with Forum Fest. So we have been planning to encourage everyone to take sustainable transportation, if at all possible. So we do have limited parking within the village. We are requiring 3 or more people in a car to park in the village, and then everyone else we're hoping to encourage to take the park and ride option. So out by Kimball Junction area, of course, there's the Kimball Junction Transit Center, Ecker Hill Park and Ride, and Jeremy Ranch. Those are all serviced by High Valley Transit bus options. We are also able to secure 2 additional lots by the Kimball Junction Transit Center in the Skull Candy parking lot and the Tech Center parking lot across the street. So right adjacent to the Kimball Junction Transit Center. So you'll have High Valley Transit options. We are also providing additional shuttles. We're calling it the Yellow Fun Bus, but there will be yellow buses circulating those park and ride options as well, and going straight from there to the Canaan's Village Transit Hub and back. So there's plenty of bus options. We also have 2 additional lots a little closer to the village in the Park City Community Church and the Winter Sports School as well. And so we'll have a separate shuttle circulating those 2 lots and going to the Canaan's Village Transit Center as well. And the cabriolet will be running. So once you get to the transit center in Canaan's Village, you take the cabriolet right up to the Forum.
Yeah. Now, the Canyons Village Transit Center, I mean, where do the buses bring people? Do they drop them off down by the 7-Eleven, or do they get brought up all the way to...
They'll get dropped off, right adjacent to the 7-Eleven, mm-hmm. Right at the base of the cabriolet.
Okay, so nobody gets brought up to the upper parking lot areas with
Correct.
A bus?
No, not with the bus.
Okay. And I'm just curious why you wouldn't bring the shuttles up there just to...
Because the cabriolet is very efficient, and it's a fun experience. People love riding the cabriolet, so that's where we're dropping everybody.
All right, so any parking down where the construction is?
So in the cabriolet lot, no, but there is a couple of small parking lots we will be utilizing right adjacent to the cabriolet lot that will park some vehicles, and it's a short walk to the cabriolet to take that up to the forum.
Okay, and will people need to be 3+ or more in a car to go?
3+ or more in the car for any lots within Canyons Village, correct.
Okay, all right. Well, tell us how construction is going, because you got started a year later than you originally intended,
sure.
But we're hoping to get it all done.
Yeah, construction is going well. It is on schedule. You know, it's a two-phase project. So the first phase is well underway, should be completed by mid-December in time for the heavy skier traffic season. And then the second phase will begin next spring after the winter's completed.
Yeah, so what will you have this winter?
Yeah, so the goal is to have three levels completed by this December, so you can park in the first two levels this next winter, and then starting next spring, we'll complete the last two levels, so it'll be ready by winter of, or December 2026.
Okay. How many of those levels are underground?
About two, but it's the way the slope kind of goes, it's kind of hard to tell exactly, but yeah, about two.
Okay, and then like another two on top.
Yeah, two to three, depending on which side you're looking.
Yeah, yeah. And can you explain, because I had heard it at one point, that there's actually several exits to get traffic out of there, you know, come ski season?
Yep, there's been a lot of operational plans being looked at on how the traffic will flow in and out, and yeah, multiple different options, so... it is a resort-led project, and so they've been planning very diligently on how that's all going to flow.
Okay, and then who's funding construction of the garage? Is it CVMA?
Oh, it's a multi-partnership, but again, it's mostly the resort really leading that project.
Okay, and has construction, I mean, what kind of impact has it had on summer operations this year?
Not too much, because we do have some available parking up in the village closer to the forum area for a lot of our summer guests that are coming in. So really not too impactful. The construction has been going well. It's been flowing very well for summer operations.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. How many people do you usually draw to Forum Fest?
So Debbie? In total for the 3 days, about 50,000 people.
Wow.
It's a lot of people.
Yeah. Yeah. So split between the 3 days.
Yeah. With July 4th being the busiest day.
Okay. All right. Anything else you want to tell our listeners?
Yeah. Head to forumfest.com for additional details. There are just more details on there in terms of the parking. There's actually a parking map that shows all the different lots and things like that. So it's a really handy website. And there are also lodging deals. So if you don't want to park and you just want to do a staycation, there are lodging deals specifically for Forum Fest for this 4th of July weekend.
Okay. Otherwise, John planned a carpool, right? You're
going
to turn people away if they don't have three people on the vehicle.
Correct. Yep. Please carpool or use the transit options available.
Okay. John and Patty, thanks so much. Debbie.
Thank you. Sorry.
Well, a second group of Midway residents has sued the Heber Valley Special Service District. KPCW's Grace Dorfler reports that, as with the February lawsuit, the residents allege the odor of nearby wastewater treatment ponds harms their health.
The lawsuit, filed Friday in 4th District Court, says residents have experienced health problems, lower quality of life, and decreased home values because of the smell of the treatment ponds during changing seasons. The residents also allege the service district minimized their concerns and didn't do enough to fix the problem. Four Midway locals sued the service district back in February. Now, five more neighbors have joined them by taking similar legal action. The new lawsuit claims the service district's alleged failure to act has, quote, abridged or destroyed plaintiffs' ability to use and enjoy their property without significant risk or actual damage to their health and the health of their families, end quote. The lawsuit says residents have experienced symptoms like gastrointestinal issues and respiratory problems. It asks the special service district to update its facility and compensate the residents for the alleged harm. Attorney Eric Vogeler is representing both groups of plaintiffs. He said he will ask the court to consolidate this new case into the February lawsuit. In response to the original lawsuit, the service district denied it intentionally caused any harm and said it does not owe residents any damages. It also said the court should consider residents' choices to purchase property near the treatment ponds. Meanwhile, scientists are still working to understand what health effects, if any, the ponds might have. Researchers from Utah's Environmental Epidemiology Program are conducting a risk assessment for a toxin called hydrogen sulfide, which has a rotten egg smell and can cause symptoms like headaches, fatigue, and respiratory problems. Data collection will continue through July 11th. Grace Dorfler, KPCW News.
In the studio now with an update from Summit Land Conservancy, I have CEO Cheryl Fox. Good morning.
Good morning.
Tell us about the newest SAFE in the Camas Valley.
Yes, we are very excited that we were able to complete the conservation of 61 acres. This is in the Camas Meadow. It is between Democrat Alley and Beaver Creek. It is, so it's, you know, it's that wet meadow that really must not have pavement on it if we're to maintain our water quality and quantity. So we're so grateful to the family, the Young family from Oakley, for being willing to do this conservation project with us. We're always grateful to Summit County that was able to put a significant funding together to help us out with that. So that came from both the county's general obligation bond that was passed in 2021, as well as the Eastern Summit County Agricultural Preservation Committee funds. And that comes from sales of promontory lots. So that was a significant portion of the funding. And the rest came from the Summit Land Conservancy. And so when I say that, you know, individual donors save land, this is absolutely the case.
Okay. So what did you have to pay for the conservation easement?
Well, you know, we don't like to say exactly because, you know, this is, it ends up being, it is a personal situation for these landowning families who do live in our communities. The overall project budget was north of $1 million. Each family also donates a portion of the value, so they're not getting that full amount. And then there's, of course, Summit Land Conservancy. We have transaction costs and appraisals and surveys and things that we have to pay for. And we always have to put aside funding for stewardship because, you know, once we save the land, then every year from now until all eternity, somebody has to go out and look and make sure that the land continues to be used for agriculture and protected. So, you know, it's rarely the initial family that puts the land in easement that causes a problem. We generally find problems happen through neighbors or, you know, other people who just don't realize that there's an easement there.
Yeah. So is this the Gerald Young family?
Yeah. Yes, it is.
Okay.
Gerald Young.
Mm-hmm. All right.
And, you know, I think he's the grandmaster in the rodeo this year out in Oakley. So if you see him, I mean, and this is the second easement we've done with him. So he's been in Oakley for 94 years, really an icon.
Yeah. So what does that entitle them to do with the 61 acres? I mean, will they continue to use it as agricultural property?
Exactly. Yep. They continue to farm it, graze it. You know, it's a pasture, and it's part of a larger cow-calf operation that they have, and as is the first easement that they did with us. It just allows them to free up some liquidity that they have in this ground that they've owned for generations. Well, maybe not generations, but for a very long time, because Gerald has been around for a very long time. You know, people have things that they need to do, you know, maybe reinvest in their operation or, you know, sometimes pay for care and things like that. So this is a really, it's a win-win, right, for the family. They can continue farming and ranching. They can sell the property to somebody else, but the next owner has to continue to abide by the conservation easement.
Yeah, and I was going to say, I mean, they get a little bit of cash in their pocket, and yet not nearly, however, what they could have had they sold it to a developer and we put a bunch of
exactly.
House in it.
So we're always so grateful for these families who are willing to do this, you know. They don't make as much money as if they sold the ground, but they get to keep it. So, and the thing is, it's really, it's a win for the community as well, because, you know, in so many cases, we all like to just see it stay as it is today, right, which is a pasture. And the fiscally responsible way, maybe, that's what I'm trying to say, way of doing that is just to keep farmers farming, right? And so that's what this does. They continue to stay in agriculture. They're responsible for the fences. They're responsible for weed control, as opposed to, say, the public. And so it's really a great win for everybody.
Yeah. And as you said, I mean, this is the conservation easement for time and all eternity. How is that noted, though? I mean, a deed gets changed to say that this conservation easement exists?
That's right. Well, the deed, the conservation easement actually is recorded on title of the property. So if anybody comes in, you know, when you do, when you buy a property, you do a title search. You should do a title search. And it comes up in that situation, and so then people are able to say, oh, all right, you know, I cannot put homes on this ground because the easement specifically prohibits that.
Yeah. And as you mentioned that you actually had to put in your own money. Tell me what happened here.
A significant amount of our own money. So we did have federal funding for this project. The Summit Land Conservancy was granted a regional conservation partnership program grant from the federal government in 2020 for a little over $9 million. And it's called the Utah Headwaters Initiative, part of our Utah Headwaters Initiative. And so this property fit with that, the goals of that project. And so the federal government had awarded us the money to match the county dollars. And then also we'd had some grants in place and some private donors. But the federal money was taking too long. It actually, there's a glitch in the system, and this project is not the only one in the nation that has run up against this glitch. The glitch happened actually in December, so under the previous administration. I think there's just somebody at the IRS whose job, who isn't at their desk. you know, there's getting federal money on the ground isn't easy, and it should not be, right? You don't want fraud, waste, and corruption. So there are a lot of checks and balances. This is one situation where there are three separate agencies that have to verify something. What could possibly go wrong? So, you know, you have the FSA, which is the Farm Service Association, you have the NRCS, Natural Resources Conservation Service, and you have the IRS, Internal Revenue Service. So all of these agencies have to verify something. And, you know, in any case, one agency couldn't. And so it was just stuck. And we tried different workarounds, and we couldn't do it. So finally, we can't always do this. But in this situation, because the landowner, you know, is 94 years old and doesn't have a whole lot of time to wait. So I'm really proud our Summit Land Conservancy board decided to say, you know what, we're going to go ahead, we're going to use our own reserve funds, and we're going to get it done. So we called up the family and said, we'll get it done in 2 weeks. Do you want to do it? And they said, of course we do. So we did it. And so the federal money will not come into play for this particular project. It goes back into the pool of our RCPP grant, so we can use it for a different project, but we won't be able to reimburse ourselves for this. So when I say individuals save land, it's gifts from people at the Blue Sky Bash or Live PC Give PC, or just donors who, you know, donate money at any time. This is what we are able to do. It's powerful.
All right. I mean, but it would take a whole new grant application in order to get what you have gotten from this.
It wouldn't really be, I mean, it won't be possible now, because once the easement is placed, the federal government will not give you money for a conservation easement, because why would they pay for something that's already there? Which makes sense.
Yeah. All right. Lots going on this summer. What have you got?
Lots and lots going on. And a lot in July, and a lot actually next week. So we have a hop hike happening next week up in Empire Canyon, or maybe it is on the rail trail. We also have a volunteer day next Tuesday if people want to come out to the Rocky Point Preserve and help pull some weeds. On Wednesday is the hop hike. We also have nature bathing and journaling along with our friends at the Swanner Nature Preserve on July 10th. And then we also have on July 22nd an adventure under the full moon, and that will be out at Riverview Trailhead. So all of this is available if people want to go look on our website. We do ask that people go sign up, because, you know, we can't have 800 people out there, because that would just be overwhelming. So we do limit it. Most of these events are free. We are also having, on Friday next week, there's a beer garden in City Park with Offset Beer, our friends at Offset Beer. So that's another fun activity. Lots of fun things going on.
Okay. And again, it's all wesaveland.org. People sign up because I think you limit the groups.
That's right. Wesaveland.org, and then click on happenings and you can find all the fun events there too.
Okay. And I think you still have some early bird tickets for the Blue Sky Bash.
The Blue Sky Bash, which is the most fun way to help save open space. It is our gala, a wonderful evening hosted by the Lodge at Blue Sky. We have some great sponsors this year, including High West, and as always, Bill White, and we will be offering as an auction item the incredible Bill White Adventure Dinner, is what we call it. This is something that you can't buy. You can't call up, you know, the Bill White restaurant and say, hey, I want an adventure dinner. The only way to get it is through our auction or at Jan's Winter Welcome. They offer a few of them there, too. But so this is a great way to come out and support, again, the kind of conservation that the Summit Land Conservancy is able to do, only because people show up and help us out. So, yes, tickets are available on our website at wesaveland.org. Early bird tickets are available through the end of next week, I believe, and then the price does go up a little bit. The event's likely to sell out, but we also offer a free shuttle. Well, it's not free. A $15 shuttle from the Park City High School in case people don't want to drive back and forth, and we do recommend the shuttle. We used to offer it for free, but then sometimes people would sign up for the shuttle and then decide not to take it. So we had more buses than we needed, and that doesn't really work. So, yeah.
Okay. So what can you save by buying a ticket now?
$50 a ticket.
Okay.
Yeah.
And tickets are, looks like, $500?
$500 a person, yeah. And they will go up at the end of next week.
So, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
We have a couple tables left. Do people want to do that, too? So get a group together and bring your friends. And do visit the website because we have other fabulous auction items. We have a brief auction and then a paddle raise and then line dancing, which was super fun last year. Everybody was up out of their chairs. And it's such a beautiful event, a beautiful venue. Our friends from Hawkwatch come and they bring raptors. So during the cocktail hour, you're out on this glorious patio and, you know, there's cocktails and you can meet an eagle or an owl or some interesting hawks, and that's the most popular part of the evening, that's just absolutely beautiful.
Okay, anything else, Cheryl, you want to mention?
Again, I hope people are safe and enjoying the outdoors. I was up on Charlie's 9K over the weekend, and the wildflowers are unbelievably beautiful, so
time of year.
Enjoy.
Okay, yeah. Thanks, Cheryl.
Thank you.
Cheryl Fox is the CEO of Summit Land Conservancy. Well, a lively evening of piano music, community, and heritage all come together this week for the Music for the Mines fundraiser, which will benefit the nonprofit Friends of Ski Mountain Mining History. The fundraiser is happening Wednesday, July 2nd. It features local piano legend Rich Wyman, who, despite a recent injury, will still be pounding the piano keys with one hand. He'll have two other pianists while taking requests from the highest bidder. Co-chair for the nonprofit, Don Wall, says that the organization is celebrating its 10th year and wanted to do something special while promoting and saving all of the mine structures that exist in our local mountains.
Make sure that they're still here 50 to 100 years from now. If we didn't step in, they were all falling apart due to age, weather, and the tough environment up there on the mountain.
Again, the event will raise funds to preserve and promote the rich mining history. In addition to the sale of tickets, attendees can bid to have a song played. There are just a handful of tickets left. The proceeds will benefit the Thanes Mine Complex Project, which Roll says they hope to start next summer. Work will reconstruct the hoist house and put a new roof on it as well. For tickets or more information on Friends of Ski Mountain Mining History, you can visit the link online at kpcw.org.